Welcome back to Community Connections, and for the next hour, of course, being the first Monday. I don't know why I keep saying Monday. I'm never here on a Monday. The first Wednesday of the month is our private investigator, Peter. And I should mention, just before I introduce Peter, that we did his Choice Tunes last week. So it was a great little show. So if you go onto our website, www.yarravalleyfm.org.au, click on, down the side, click on the podcast. When the next screen, you'll see Choice Tunes. Click on Choice Tunes, and Peter's the top one. And there are various other people there that I've interviewed over the last 12 months. So I think next Tuesday is the 12-month celebration of running Choice Tunes. So there's a whole lot of them down there, about 24 of them, including myself, but certainly have a listen to Peter's. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk to Peter. How are you, Peter?
Good, thank you, Alan. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely pleasure to have you. Now, Peter, we sent you away with a bit of homework last time. We've got a bit for you to take away this time as well. So do you want to bring us up to date on what the homework was, please?
The homework that you gave me was basically just going through the highs and lows of life as a private investigator.
Yep.
So I guess that's fairly simple in a way, because the highs are obviously getting the result or the answer for your client, whoever that might be. And obviously the lows are the frustrations that you might experience on the way to get yourself to the inevitable outcome or the answer that that you hope to get. So it's probably the frustration when perhaps I make a mistake or circumstances prevent you from keeping tabs on who you're trying to keep tabs on or whatever, and you have to live to fight another day sometimes.
Peter, is there ever a case that you're working on that is just so hopeless in the end you just have to give it away and say to your client, look, whatever it is, I don't know what sort of case it was, but you've just got to turn around and say, I can't make it. It's not your fault. It's just everything goes against that case.
Yeah, probably not very often. I mean, there's sometimes you might get some alarm bells ringing and things like that, and sometimes if it's perhaps a workers' compensation type case, the person just may not leave the house. whether they know you're there or they suspect that they're going to be they're being watched or potentially watched, then look, you can get nil results. Probably not really is the answer.
Peter, in your job, and I know it's not all the flash running around that we sort of talk about from time to time, on any of the cases that you've been involved in, have you ever found yourself where you feel as though you're in danger yourself?
No, you do develop a little bit of a sixth sense for that, and obviously one of the things you would always try to do is avoid any confrontation, because that could lead to confirmation, and you probably never want to sort of ever give up who you're actually surveilling or why you actually might be at a location. So it's better to get out of Dallas.
Get out of harm's way.
Get out of harm's way, yep.
Peter, obviously, we've talked that you do a bit of work for divorce work and that. Have you ever had the stage where a husband is really annoyed with you because you've proved what they've been doing and, you get a bit, have to keep a bit of an eye out for a few months until they settle down? Does that ever happen?
Look, it's something that crosses your mind, but to be perfectly honest with you, it's never actually happened. I assume some of them would be pretty angry at being caught out, but I guess at the end of the day, it's probably a situation of don't shoot the messenger, really. So
I guess, and at the end of the day, you didn't make them go and hook up with another woman or what else, did you?
No, I think not. No, I've never personally been confronted. I've never even received any abusive phone calls along those lines, so
that's all right.
I guess once the jig's up, there's probably not much point arguing with it in many ways.
Yeah. And I think you've said before too that particularly in some of those cases that the women forgive and forget, and then they're back a 2 or 3 years later, don't they?
Yes, I do get a surprising amount of repeat business, and I think I brought this up once before, but I close my conversations with my lady clients normally with a bit of a throwaway line, which is a leopard never changes its spots.
Yep.
And quite often they'll ring me back, one, two, five, 6 years down the track and they repeat that exact line back.
Do they? They say to you, you were right.
Exactly.
Peter, I just need to take a quick break. I've got something that I want to talk to you about and we'll be straight back. Go to our website, www.yarravalleyfm.org.au. Click on the podcast. Then on the next screen, go to Choice Tunes. In fact, you can go to Community Connections too and listen to P.I. Pete anytime you want to, but also go on to Choice Tunes, click on that, and you'll find he'll be the top one. And have a listen to the music that's influenced his life over his lifetime. Was Linda Ronstadt and You're No Good. Welcome back to Community Connections, and I've got Peter, our private investigator, with us. Peter, we were talking a little while ago about these face recognition cameras. Now, let me say up front, I don't really care whether they turned on or not, because I'm not going in to rob a store and I really couldn't care less. I know that the civil libertarians don't like it, but from my point of view, so I'm not arguing against them or for them or whatever. Peter, do you think this is going to be something that is going to take on with other retailers, or do you think there's been a bit of a backlash on them?
Oh, look, I think technology and use of technology and improvements in the technology in respect to the digital captures and things like that. I think it's the future, personally. I think that if you look at, you know, say the City of London, for argument's sake, or even probably the City of Melbourne, the cameras that are on the streets and things like that, they're getting better and better in respect to the quality of the footage that they're taking or the stills that they're capturing. So, look, I think it's inevitable at some point in time.
Peter, I just remembered that while you were saying that, I remember years ago, I think Malcolm Fraser was the Prime Minister, they held Chogham in Melbourne. And I remember they put cameras all down the Tullamarine Freeway. And at that time, they were only allowed to put them up or got away with it because all the world leaders were coming in and they promised they'd pull them down. I don't know if they ever did pull them down. So, I mean, a lot of the, while the technology mightn't have been as good as what they are now, a lot of this technology has been used over a long period of time, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think probably the thing to bear in mind is the improvement in the quality of the vision or the footage or the stills or whatever you want to say. There's such a marked difference now between what a picture might be able to produce in evidence in court than sort of a granulated, pixelated thing that may or may not be the person in question. So, yeah.
Peter, Ken, if a store has got them, and we're not going to name stores because we don't care who they are, if someone's got them, can they, under the current legal terms, I guess, can they be used, downloaded and used in court or otherwise? I mean, what's the point of having them?
Yeah, well, I would suspect that if a member of the police force asks for proof of what's being alleged or what CCTV is available, and you see that on the TV shows and the movies now anyway, the first thing they do is look up and around to see what cameras are around. Could be an ATM, could be a bank, it could be just a building, that any premises that's got a security camera out front. And the first thing the police detective or private investigator will do, not that we've probably got those powers in Australia, would be to go and ask for the CCTV.
Now, you've just hit on a subject I was going to be my next question. Who can access that, those facial recognition? Is it only the police, or can the store review it at any time, or could a private investigator walk in and say, well, you really couldn't, could you? I don't know. Who could review it?
Not in Australia, but I think you need to draw the difference, Alan, between CCTV footage as opposed to facial recognition footage. So I think we're talking about two different...
All right, so what is the difference, Peter?
Well, my understanding of the facial recognition is that in a head office somewhere, perhaps, someone walks into a store...
Yep.
And that recognition software is presumably operating, although probably not at the moment.
Yep.
And if that comes up with a hit, you know, it picks your nose and eyes and whatever the factors of identification are,
yep,
and it throws up a match or perhaps a potential match or a partial match or a, I don't know, maybe a 90% match, then the alert then is, that generates an alert, as I understand it, which gives the opportunity for the retailer to alert their staff of perhaps someone who's been banned from the store or someone's been involved in a physical altercation previously and shouldn't really be there. So that's my understanding of how facial recognition works, in that it generates an alert which may then be acted upon.
Which means at some stage that person has to have, for some reason, be tagged somewhere, doesn't it?
Yes. They have to have been identified as as an offender, someone who's, as I mentioned before, is presumably not supposed to be there.
Yep.
And therefore, as I think the retailers have been arguing, is it's actually a defensive and also staff security concern rather than any other sort of... nefarious concerns, yeah.
Because I remember somebody that I know quite well works in a supermarket, and they told me once that if a person gets caught shoplifting, when they and this is going back a while ago, if they wanted to go back to that store, they had to go to the front counter and ask for the manager, and they used to have to tell them who they were, and then the manager would let them in, but they would know then that, hey, we've got someone here that, that we really need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, Alan, how many people are going to do that?
Peter, I've got to take another quick break and we'll come back and see what you've got in store for us. Just take those old records off the shelf. I sit and listen to them by myself. Today's music ain't got the same soul. I like that old time of rock and roll. Don't try to take me to a disco. You'll never even get me out on the floor. In 10 minutes I'll be late for the door. I like that old time of rock and roll. Still like that old time of rock and roll. That kind of music just soothes my soul. I reminisce about the days of old with that old time of rock and roll.
This is Clark from Ringwood. You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
And the show is Community Connections, and I've got with me our private investigator, and we're talking about his life as a private investigator. Peter, we've got all sorts of weeks, and you're telling me that we've got a special week this week.
Yeah, so it's first week of August is put down as Missing Persons Week, so you'll probably see a little bit more... few more posts on social media and perhaps a few more newspaper articles bringing up stories about people that have probably been missing for quite some time and seeking any information or anything that might help locate them. And obviously that also means that people have gone missing quite recently as well. So,
Peter, do you ever get involved with any of those sorts of cases?
I have done in the past very occasionally with missing persons, but probably just a slight tangent off that is more often it's about finding birth parents and things like that, or perhaps lost relatives. And
have you done much of that?
I've done a little bit of that over the journey. So sometimes it's been birth parents and sometimes it's been lost relatives or even... lost relationships, lost partners or something like that, that they might want to try and rekindle the connection.
Yeah. Peter, I suppose this is probably an unfair question to throw at you, but I always like to try and throw a few harder questions. What percentage of people that go missing because they want to go missing? Have you got any idea?
I would suspect, I don't have any direct knowledge, but I would suspect it'd be a fairly high percentage.
Would it?
And in fact, that current TV show that's getting quite some good ratings, as I understand it, is about people trying to disappear for a period of time. So, I think some people, might be getting a bit tough at home, or perhaps there's a financial element as well, and they disappear.
And of course, it is no crime to disappear. Like, I mean, missing person is a bit different if people have gone missing because of foul play and that. But there's no crime in a person just disappearing, is there?
Unless they owe money, I would suspect.
That's probably pretty good.
I think the debtor might have a different point of view.
you're probably spot on with that. But it's fascinating as to why people would go missing. But in Missing Person Week, Peter, are they looking for people like that who have just disappeared into thin air, or is it also about people that have might have been murdered and they're missing through foul play, should I say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as I said just before, I think if you looked a bit more closely at Victoria Police social media pages and that, they're bringing up cases, unsolved, mysteries and crimes from quite a while back, and perhaps there could even be some rewards put up. And equally, I must point out too that there's quite regular posts coming up on people that are missing, like currently, as in, over the last few days or whatever. Right. I do actually go through that reasonably regularly, and I would suspect off the top of my head there'd be about a dozen posts a week of generally younger people that have gone missing for whatever reasons. I should say about half of them actually do then get found reasonably quickly, which is good news.
Yeah, some of those, like young people who mum told them to clean up the room and they told mum what to do and they had an argument and then walked out, are they included in missing persons, or do you have to be, let me go another way, do you have to be missing for a certain period of time before you can be listed as a missing person?
Yeah, look, I don't have any direct knowledge of that, but I think there's something about 24 hours or something, but equally if there's a potential of foul play, I think the first 48 hours to 72 hours is quite important as well. So if there is a missing person report and there's a fear of foul play, yep, then I think the quicker it gets put out on social media and other forms of media to hopefully bring that sighting, that report, saw them get into a car, that kind of thing,
yep,
that'll help police, get on top of it. I mean, you go back to the recent one with the child taken from the camping ground up in, it was a WA or Northern
yes.
Territory.
Yep. Yep.
That's a classic example that, the media and the public's response probably led to helping that result.
Yeah. One of the things too, I guess, that's helped a lot of this is mobile phones, isn't it? You can take a video or do a lot of stuff that you couldn't do sort of 15 years ago or 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in these days where people are probably reluctant to get physically involved, if you like,
yep,
I'd say the default setting for a lot of people these days would actually be to pull the phone out and actually record it from a safe distance, in inverted commas, as opposed to actually interfering.
Yeah. Peter, then another interesting question, or it is to me, how often would you use the likes of your mobile phone to be involved in anything you're doing, or is that just only for the rest of us, the dummies?
No, absolutely. Tool of the trade, the mobile phone. It's probably even taken over from the, almost taken over from the video camera because of the quality of the pictures and of course, the ability to zoom. Yep. But mind you, I had a little job on this morning and I pulled the old video camera out and picked off some very good still footages that I still images that I needed to get. So mix and match is probably the answer.
Yeah. I was going to ask you what you were doing, but we won't touch that at all, Peter.
No. And the other one to bear in mind too, Alan, which is quite, and you'll see, please, for people from police asking for dash cam footage as well. So
yeah, I've noticed that a bit.
Yeah, so dash cam can be relatively good, although there isn't necessarily a zoom capability with the dash cam. So I think you get a mixed bag, and obviously there's different qualities of cameras, but sometimes, you know, dash cam footage from a liability defensive, you know, insurance liability point of view can be helpful for the owner of the dash cam, but equally there could be, you know, they could witness something that they may not be aware they're witnessing at the time.
Yeah, I heard of a case, this is going back a few years ago, where a policeman pulled a person up for doing the wrong thing. It was over motor, and they protest their innocence and didn't think they had actually done what the policeman thought. And the police would do his credit when his shift was over, went back and had a look at the fact. And he said, oh, yes, he had made a mistake, that he thought this light had changed earlier than what it actually had, and he actually rang the person back and said, look, you know, we won't take that any further because I honestly made a mistake. I mean, pretty good.
Yeah, well, I think at the end of the day, and that's a terrific attitude by the police officer, but I think at the end of the day, I mean, most police cars these days have got the cameras installed and probably rightly so.
Yep.
And, of course, if you were trying to defend that matter, you could request the footage.
Yep.
And equally, of course, most police officers these days, or many of them, are wearing body cameras as well. So, yeah. Again, you could possibly request the footage if you believe that, you know, that they'd acted inappropriately.
Sounds fair. Peter, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
No problem.
Thanks.
Don't
Welcome back to Community Connections. Before we go on, I should mention that I've been talking about Peter, the PI, private investigator, and we did his choice tunes last week. And unfortunately, the last song, because we talked or I talked too long, we had to chop off. And it was a song that Peter said shouldn't be cut off, but we didn't have any option. The news was coming, and it was Pink Floyd and Wish You Were Here. So we'll be knocking off at about 2:55 because I need to get out of the studio to let Greg in, and we'll be playing that song. So, Peter, you'll be able to sit back, put your feet up, and hear the whole song.
Yep, that'll be great. That's my favourite song.
Well, it's coming up at about 5. We've got to allow 5 minutes, and we'll be there. Peter, you want to talk about insurance and some of the things they get up to?
Yeah, so there's been some recent publicity coming out where insurance companies have been knocking back claims under home and contents insurance. So say for argument's sake you unfortunately have a fire at your home and your home's destroyed and your contents are destroyed as well. And what they're doing is they're finding out people are running businesses, whether it's a hobby business or in fact have an ABN registered at their home address, and they're actually declining the claim if you haven't told the insurer that you're running a business from your home.
I shouldn't laugh.
And, of course, with the pandemic and things like that, a lot more people are working from home, which is a different category, of course.
Yeah.
But a lot of people perhaps have moved their business back home as well to operate from home. Yeah. And, again, if you haven't alerted your insurer of that, you run the risk that they may have a technical out on any home and contents claim.
Why should we be surprised? No, I shouldn't say that.
No, I actually agree with you. I think there's comments being made about the spirit of the spirit of the policy or the spirit of the insurance code, but at the end of the day, it's a contract, and if you breach the contract, then the insurance company's got an out. So.
Yeah, unbelievable. Peter, I just want to tell you about something for a bit of homework first, and then we'll come back because we are starting to run out of time. Peter, now, I'm going to put something to you. Now, it may very well be, I don't want an answer today because we want it next week, and you may come back and say, look, I don't want to tell you. So we accept that. There are things that you have to do that you may not want to talk, but a person has rung us, and we should mention too that the name of your business is Absolute Facts, and you are available to do this sort of work. But, Peter, all right, so Alan Collier owns a business. I've got to try and put this together because it was told to me another way, and I don't want to sort of get too specific. All right, Alan Collier owns a business. I come to a private investigator, not necessarily you, just I go to a private investigator, and I say, Peter, I'm being robbed. I'm not making the money I should be making. So either the stock's being knocked off and therefore I haven't got it to sell, or somebody is either infiltrating or one of my employees are either knocking off the material or they're knocking off money or I've got thieves that are coming in and do it. The person would like to know how if Alan Collier rang you today and you came and saw me and I put that in front of you, how would you go about building a case around that? Now, we know that there are things that you have to do that we shouldn't be told about because it's none of our business and that's how you have to operate. Could you have a look at that and give us just a brief outline on how you would go about trying to work out, firstly, who it was that was committing the crime and how they were doing it?
Yeah, sure. Look, there is definitely a methodology there, and it probably depends very much on the size of the business. In other words, how many people have the opportunity to commit the offence.
Yep.
And it does definitely happen, and that generally goes under the banner of shrinkage.
Yep.
or just outright theft if it's cash or things like that. And look, there's plenty of ways, as people are probably aware, that can happen. There can be, you know, simple things like dummy invoicing and stuff
like
that.
Before you go on, I just don't want to go into it today, and I'd like you to come back to us and just give us a bit of an idea, just a broad outline of how you would go about building that sort of case, or as to what, who it was and what was happening.
Sure. And obviously the initial part would be an initial consultation where you sit down and get a feel for the business and what's actually disappearing, and then you'd build it from there.
So if you can have a look at that. Now, Peter, we've got about 5 minutes left, because as I said, I got knocked off at 1:55. I'm sure you've got a few other things you'd like to, or something else you'd like to talk to us about.
Yeah, so again, some recent publicity's come up in respect to counterfeit banknotes.
Again, yes.
And the Reserve Bank of Australia's put up some information on their page, if anyone wants to shoot off to the Reserve Bank of Australia's page. So Victoria Police and others have issued the counterfeit note warning yet again, quite recently, and the Reserve Bank's put up some tips as to how you identify a counterfeit banknote, particularly the new polymer series of banknotes.
Is it any particular denomination, Peter?
Generally pineapples, as we call them in Australia. So the $50 probably the main one. I guess the $100 note would be another one.
Yeah.
I would have thought the 50 would be the most common.
I mean, the Reserve Bank, every time they bring out new notes and a new, say, well, these are foolproof, but it seems to me the crooks are about one step behind them. As soon as they bring out, they find a way around it.
I'm not aware that they can actually copy the actual note. I think there's always going to be flaws, and I'm just looking at the tips that they've put up about the $50 note. Yeah, they have a counterfeit detection guide. So if anyone's concerned, go to the Reserve Bank website, and they put up some tips about tilting the note and the UV light and things like that. And my understanding too is it's very, very difficult for them to actually copy the some of the embedded process in there.
Oh, so it's more the person not being aware or not paying enough attention, so that it's not as though they've got them perfect. It's just that whoever it is just doesn't pay enough attention when they take them in.
Oh, I think there's some security elements there that perhaps can't be copied. That's my understanding anyway. So there's always going to be flaws, even though they could be quite difficult to detect if you're just sort of glancing at them, which I guess most retail people probably just glance at them, or perhaps there's a few counterfeits put in with a bunch of genuine notes, and if you're just sort of clicking through, counting out $20, $50 notes, you may not pick the two or three counterfeits in there.
And I guess if you're one of these big retailers, and you've got a young person generally on the cash register, and they're busy, they've got six or eight people, I guess they just have to take them through, and in a lot of cases they haven't got time to stand there and look at them, have they?
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's again where probably the $50 probably more likely to be the attempt to be made with a $50 rather than $100, because I think people are a lot more wary of $100 note anyway. So.
Not many of us see a lot of them, Peter.
Especially if you're buying a packet of chewing gum and trying to pay with a $100 note. So,
you got another quick one, Peter, before we go?
There's a little bit of publicity coming about, speaking of cash and notes, is about the, they've renamed the black economy the shadow economy. And the Australian Taxation Office has estimated that the cost of the cash economy, or the shadow economy, or the black economy, whichever word you want to use, is about $11 billion in taxes per year.
$11
billion? Yeah, and they're also pointing out that the pandemic has had no real effect on the shadow economy, so it's still trundling along nicely, and all that tax-free transactions that are going on. The ATO, as I said, estimates it's a cost of $11 billion in unpaid tax to the community in Australia.
Peter, do they think that some of those are, in fact, like the tradies and people like that, or no idea?
Yes. No, they have. They've put up their list of industries that they're claiming to keep the most eye on, and building and construction is number one. Hairdressing and beauty services, cafes and restaurants, road freight transport, management advice and related consulting services.
Fair dinkum. So they've got a bit of an idea who's getting into this, haven't they?
Yeah, so they've published their list of people that they're more concerned about, I guess, is the best wording for that.
Sure. Peter, look, it's fast running out of time, and we do want to get this Pink Floyd in for you, so you'll be able to sit back and listen to it. Again, Peter, look, thank you for your time. We really enjoy having you along, and we'll have you along the first Monday. I don't know. Well, I keep saying Monday. I'm never here on a Monday. The first Wednesday of, it'll be September then.
Yes, that's right. Maybe we might be experiencing a little better weather than that forecast you put up before.
I hope so. The other, I don't know with your signal, but I'm sick of these winds, because even if it's not too bad outside, the wind is just terrible.
Yeah, and the chill factor, yeah.
Oh, terrible. Peter, again, thank you for your time. We do appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you next month. And also, if you could have a look at how you would go about building some sort of case, and just see how that takes you.
No problem at all. Thank you for having me, Alan.
Thanks, mate. We'll talk to you later on.